or not. Thinking for a moment longer, he added, "Worst case scenario, I messed them up and you'd have to wait a few days until seventh day until I could make a few more gold coins. Then you could simply go back and buy some balance knives from the blacksmith. As long as you don't kill him this time," he said, laughing at his own joke. "Hey," she said, slapping his arm. As she hit his arm, he dropped the sharp knife, and it sank deep into his foot. Lusam screamed with the sudden pain in his foot, stumbled backwards, and found himself sitting on the floor, staring open-mouthed at the knife protruding from his foot. "Oh, God, I'm so sorry, Lusam," Neela said, panicking at the sight of her knife in Lusam's foot. "What shall I do? Shall I go get the healer to come down here? Oh, I'm so, so sorry." Neela was almost beside herself with grief at what she had done to Lusam. Breathing through the pain, Lusam replied, "It's okay. Just wait a second." He concentrated on the area of his foot where the knife was sticking out, and searching his newly acquired knowledge of healing magic, he applied a spell to stop the pain emanating from it. With a huge sigh of relief, he lay back on the floor. He then took several deep breaths, desperately trying to stop himself feeling so nauseous. Now that his mind was free of the pain, he could think much more clearly for a solution to his predicament. He realized the book had taught him how to heal wounds, and although he was confident he could complete the spell successfully, he would have preferred it if his first attempt had not been on himself. "Neela, I need you to pull out the knife," he said, still lying flat on his back. "If I do it myself, I think I'll just throw up."
"But if I pull it out, it's going to hurt you even more. I've already hurt you enough," she replied, almost in tears.
"No, don't worry. It won't hurt me. I've already blocked the pain with magic. I definitely need you to remove the knife, though. I've never been good with blood, especially my own," he replied, still looking at the ceiling.
"Okay. If you're sure you want me to do that," she asked,
looking at his very pale and sweaty face. He nodded his agreement to her, so she quickly bent down and removed the knife in one swift movement. Much to her relief, Lusam didn't make a sound, but now she was stood holding one of her knives coated in her best friend's blood. She had seen blood many more times than she cared to remember, but never had it affected her this way. Putting the knife down, she went to Lusam's side and took hold of his hand. Lusam looked up at Neela and smiled at her, then squeezed her hand.
"Don't worry, I'll be fine," he tried to reassure her. "Could you remove my boot, please? I'm not sure I can sit up yet, and it feels like it's bleeding quite badly. I can feel my boot filling up."
At that, Neela began to look even more worried, but she began to loosen his boot as he asked. When she was able to remove the boot and see the wound for herself, she was amazed how calm Lusam was. The knife had passed right through his foot and left a nasty-looking hole the full width of the blade. His boot did indeed contain a lot of blood, as he had said, but far more concerning was the amount of blood now flowing freely from his foot. The knife must have cut through a blood vessel of some kind, and now it was pumping from his foot with each beat of his heart. Lusam concentrated on his foot with his mage sight and applied his new healing knowledge to the wound. First, he had to reconnect the severed dorsalis pedis artery, which was responsible for pumping out the blood so fast. How he even knew the name of it was a mystery, but one he would ponder over at a more appropriate time. Bringing the two severed parts together, he fused them back into one piece with magic, before moving on to inspect the rest of the injury. He didn't find anything else too serious, and began knitting the wound back together from the inside out. When he reached the surface layer, he pulled the two sides of skin back together before finally sealing the wound completely. When he opened his eyes, he saw Neela still staring at his foot with her mouth wide open, as if in mid-sentence. She noticed Lusam looking up at her, and still completely speechless, she simply shook her head, before almost diving on top of him and enveloping him with a huge hug.
"That was amazing! Your wound just healed right before my eyes! How did you do that?"
she asked in a shaky voice. "It was amongst the spells I learned from the book, fortunately for me. I was hoping to try it out on someone else first, though, to be honest." Tentatively, he removed the spell suppressing the pain, and was relieved to find he no longer had any pain in his foot. He wiggled his toes and rotated his ankle to make doubly sure everything was working correctly. Then, with a sigh, he said, "I suppose I'd better go wash all the blood out of my boot before I put it back on again."
"Oh, no, you don't. I'll go do that for you. It's the least I can do after causing the problem in the first place, she said, reaching for his boot. You stay right here and eat your lunch. I'll be right back.
Lusam almost lost control of his stomach at the thought of eating anything. I think I'll give food a wide berth for a little while, he replied, still looking very pale. Neela took the boot and disappeared up the stairs towards the shop above. After a few minutes, Lusam began to feel much better and sat upright to look around the room. He noticed the knife on the floor that had been inside his foot only a few minutes earlier. Reaching over, he picked it up to take a closer look at it. He was no expert when it came to knives, although he could testify with absolute conviction at how sharp the blade was, but even he could tell it wasn't well balanced. The handle was much heavier than the blade. He decided to try and correct the balance while Neela was gone. He very much doubted Neela would give him a hard time, even if he did end up destroying the knife whilst trying to correct its balance, not after what had just happened. He formed a close-fitting force field around the knife and began to heat the metal. Once it was molten, he simultaneously lengthened the blade whilst reducing the length of the handle. He carefully reached out his hand towards the force field, not knowing if the still molten metal inside would affect the temperature of the outside of the force field. He was almost touching the force field but couldn't feel any heat emanating from it, so he made brief contact with it to be sure. The force field was as cool as stone to his touch, so he released the levitation spell and let it fall gently into his hand. Finding the halfway point of the knife, he adjusted the length of the blade and handle until it was perfectly balanced on his finger. Once he was happy with the shape and balance, he rapidly reduced the temperature inside the force field to cool the metal. When he was certain it was cool enough, he released the force field, letting the new knife settle into the palm of his hand. After carefully inspecting the new knife, he was pleased with the results and hoped Neela would be equally pleased. Almost as an afterthought, he decided to add a small enchantment to the knife. It would strengthen the metal further and keep the blade sharp and free from corrosion, no matter what. He was keen to see how sharp the knife was and spotted the food parcel over near the door. He hobbled over to the door wearing only one boot, noticing how warm the stone floor was on his bare foot. He picked up a piece of brown paper packaging and tried the knife against its edge. The knife cut through the paper like a razor blade. Happy with the results, he looked around for more things to test it on, but there was nothing else around. He was just about to hobble back to the book room to await Neela's return when he noticed the new target she had made from the old table. How hard can it be? He said out loud to himself, hobbling towards the target. He quickly decided that he didn't want to be too close just in case the knife bounced back at him. One injury was more than enough for one day. Moving back another 10 paces, he turned to face the target. Should he hold the blade or the handle? He had no idea. Settling for holding the blade, he took aim and threw the knife fairly hard at the target, giving it every chance to stick into the wood. He watched the knife fly through the air and missed the wooden target by a small margin, cringing as the knife was about to smash into the hard stone wall. He thought he might have to quickly repair or remake the knife before Neela returned, especially if his enchantment didn't work to protect it. As the knife was about to strike the stone wall, a huge red flash radiated outwards from the impact before dissipating all around the room. Lusam stood there staring at the wall, as if expecting it to do something else, but it remained just a wall. He looked at the wall using his mage sight, and was shocked to see that the text carved into the wall now glowed like the pressure points they had found outside the secret room. He still couldn't read the strange language the words were written in, however. As Lusam looked around the room, he noticed other inscriptions carved into the walls, all glowing brightly in his mage sight, and also a few high above him on the vaulted ceiling. He remembered seeing some kind of pictures depicted up there when they had first arrived, but it had never been light enough to see what they were pictures of. Returning to his normal sight, Lusam created a light orb and sent it up towards the ceiling, curious as to what was above him. He increased its light level as it went up, and revealed the most amazing sight he had ever seen. Huge pictures of what looked like both dragons and men standing together next to the immense building and towers of some ancient, long-forgotten temple. In two of the pictures, the dragons had what looked like human riders on their backs. In others, it showed what appeared to be men and women cleaning and feeding them. One building in the picture grabbed Lusam's attention more than any other. It was a large dome-top building with glowing red walls. It showed three figures standing in front of the building, each one casting what looked like magic missiles towards the walls of the building. When he studied it further, he noticed that although it looked like they were standing outside the building, in fact they were actually inside, and the artist had just removed the front walls to reveal the interior for the benefit of the picture. Lusam let the light orb wink out high above him. He stared back at the walls surrounding him while thinking about what he had just seen. Were these walls like the ones in the picture above his head? What would be the point of magically protecting the inside of a building when attacks would come from outside? None of it made any sense to him. Then, with sudden realization, it came to him. These walls weren't built to protect the monks from outside attackers. They were meant to absorb magic, so they could train here without damaging the building itself. Keen to test his theory, he was equally keen not to bring the roof down on top of his head, and so decided to start off only with very weak basic spells. He chose a fire-based spell, and sent a weak fireball towards the wall from a safe distance. As soon as the fireball made contact with the wall, the same red shimmer flashed around the room, dissipating the effects of the fireball. Lusam could see there were no visible marks on the wall where the fireball should have hit, so he increased the power of his spell and sent another fireball towards the wall. This time the red flare was more intense, but still there was no damage to the wall. He tried several more times, each time increasing the power of the fireballs he sent, and each time the walls flashed red and dispelled the effects. Lusam was about to try other spells when Neela returned to the room carrying a clean but very wet-looking boot. She handed the dripping boot back to Lusam. He took it and said,
Thanks, I think. Sorry it's so wet. It took a while to get all the blood out of it. I thought you might be able to dry it with your magic, she replied apologetically.
Searching his mind for an appropriate spell to dry his boot, he realized he didn't have one.
Actually, I don't know how, he said, laughing at the crazy thought of being able to create gold coins and weapons or bring down a building with a simple thought, but not being able to dry his own boot. I guess I still have a lot to learn.
You're looking much better anyway, Neela offered in a low voice.
Yeah, I'm fine. Don't worry. While you were gone, I altered your knife for you. It seems to have worked quite well, but I'm no expert. You'll have to tell me what you think before I do the others. I also placed a magical enchantment on the knife, so it should be much stronger than before and never need sharpening or oiling for rust protection, he said, walking over to retrieve the knife, which was still on the floor near the target board.
He picked up the knife, walked back to where Neela was standing, and handed it to her carefully. She twirled the knife in her hand and flipped it over in midair a couple of times, before sending it flying towards the target board. With a thud, the knife struck dead center of the heart-shaped target.
Perfectly balanced. Thanks, Lusam,
Neela said, throwing her arms around his neck and giving him another big hug, as well as a kiss on the cheek.
Great. I'm glad you like it. Five more knives to balance and enchant, then. Does that mean I'll get five more hugs and kisses when I'm done?
Lusam asked, trying to keep a serious look on his face. Neela just smiled and winked at him before going to retrieve her new knife.
I found a couple of very interesting things while you were gone too, Lusam said, walking back to the area directly under the picture on the vaulted ceiling.
Oh?
Replied Neela curiously.
Do you remember when we first arrived here, I noticed some paintings high above where I'm standing now, but we couldn't see them because it was too dark?
I didn't see them. But I remember you telling me you saw something up there. Why'd you ask?
Neela replied, walking over to where Lusam was now standing.
Take a look for yourself. See what you think,
Lusam replied. A light orb suddenly appeared high above him, illuminating the ceiling, and revealed the full splendor of the incredibly detailed artwork that had been previously hidden by the darkness. He heard Neela take a sudden intake of breath as the whole image became visible.
That's amazing. It must have taken years to paint all of that, she said in a whisper, almost as if she was afraid that one of the painted figures would overhear her comments.
Yeah, I bet they had sore necks too, Lusam laughed. But the part I wanted to show you is there on the left. That building in front of those mountains, the one with the domed roof and red walls. Can you see it?
Yes, I see it, It looks like it's under attack by those figures in front of it,
Neela replied, still overawed by the sheer size and scale of the painted ceiling.
Yeah, that's the one. I thought it was under attack too when I first saw it. But if you look closer, what looks like the outside wall of the building is actually the interior wall. The artist has simply removed the front wall so we're able to see inside the building, he said, trying to point out the small but obvious details.
Yes, I think you're right. But why would anyone attack the inside of a building like that?
Neela asked, confused.
Again, I thought the same thing when I first saw it, but it's not what it seems, he said, extinguishing the light above them. Come over here, I'll show you.
And he walked back to where he first discovered the wall's innate ability to absorb impacts and magic.
Throw one of your knives at your target, but I want you to miss and hit the wall instead.
Neela looked at him as if he had gone mad.
But if I hit the wall instead of the target, it would likely destroy my knife. Or at the very least, it would need a lot of attention afterwards.
Well, it doesn't really matter that much anyway. I'll be changing them with magic when I balance them for you. But I doubt it will be damaged in any case. Trust me, he said, smiling at her.
Still not convinced by his logic, she decided not to argue and just throw the knife like he'd asked. It took a surprising amount of self-control for Neela to ignore the fact that her new knife would probably be badly damaged after deliberately hitting a solid stone wall, but she put her natural instincts aside and let the knife fly towards its fate. Just as the knife was about to hit the stone wall, a red flash erupted from the impact site, then dissipated outwards along the walls around the room.
Wow, what was that?
Neela blurted out.
I think that was the same thing we just saw in the picture on the ceiling,
Lusam replied, pointing up at where the pictures now lay in darkness.
I think this huge room was used by the monks who lived here to practice magic and maybe other offensive skills. The walls seem to absorb the impact of anything that hits them.
I suppose it makes sense, really, when you think about it. If you need to practice potentially dangerous magic, you couldn't really do it out on the streets or even out in the open air safely. Eventually, it would hit something and damage or destroy it or even kill someone.
Watch, I'll show you,
Lusam said, turning around and sending a fireball hurtling towards the wall. As before, the impact was completely dissipated by the wall.
Wow, this place gets stranger every day,
Neela said, shaking her head. Laughing, Lusam replied,
Yeah, I agree.
It would also explain why the walls and floor are always warm in winter and cool in summer. It's because they're magical in nature.
Neela just nodded her head, still trying to take in the strangeness of it all.
Looks like we'll both be practicing in here from now on in our spare time,
Lusam said, looking around the huge room.
Practicing?
Neela asked, confused.
Yeah, while you practice your knife throwing, I can practice what I learnt from the book. Some of the spells are a little confusing, and others are very complicated. This place seems like the perfect place to get some practice and increase my skills, with no chance of damaging anything accidentally or being seen by anyone.
Neela thought for a moment. Then, grinning widely, she replied,
That sounds like a good idea, but I think I'll stay out of your way while you're throwing magic around in here, if you don't mind, that is. I wouldn't want to find myself suddenly faced with a stray fireball or worse, even if you do owe me one for that foot of yours.
Lusam burst out laughing at the image that popped into his mind, of Neela being chased around the huge room by a stray fireball with a mind of its own.
Sure, no problem. I can always practice after you're done, he suggested.
Yeah, that sounds somewhat safer to me,
Neela said, laughing back at his sudden outburst. Thinking to herself for a few moments, she added,
I do have a question, though. That fireball you just sent at the wall, could you create a smaller version or something similar to cook food with? If you could, it would vastly increase the choice of food I'm able to buy.
I never thought about that, he said, running the possibility through his mind.
Yes, I believe I could.
I could even levitate the food above the fire so we wouldn't need any cooking implements. And if I placed a small force field below the fire, any food drips wouldn't make a mess on the floor either,
he replied, feeling very pleased with himself. Suddenly, images of a slow-turning roast pig levitating above a magical fire sprang into his mind, loudly awakening his stomach to the fact that he hadn't eaten anything since this morning. He was about to inform Neela when she broke the silence.
I know, you're hungry, again,
she said, rolling her eyes and going over to retrieve their lunch from near the doorway. Lusam just smiled to himself, content in the knowledge that she knew him so well. After lunch, Lusan found himself still hungry, as usual. Nothing seemed to fill him these days since he'd started doing more magic, or if it did, not for long. He spent the next hour adjusting Neela's knives using his magic, which only made him even more hungry, before returning to his book duties. Neela spent the afternoon familiarizing herself with her new weapons in the large room, practicing on her wooden target board. In the beginning, the constant thud, thud, thud of the knives hitting the wooden board almost drove him to distraction. But after a couple of hours, it became an almost comforting background noise. He knew Neela was happy in there practicing, and so that made him happy too. Later that evening, after Neela's reading lesson, Lusan returned to the large room and started practicing his various new spells alone. Each day over the next few weeks followed a very similar pattern. The only difference was he got much better at casting his spells, and the size of the book mountain reduced substantially, to the point they both could see an end in sight. Spring had definitely now arrived in Afaron. The days were becoming warmer and longer, and the birds that migrated there for the summer months were now often seen in the sky above. On each seventh day, they could now spend much more time filtering the river of its precious gold, which meant they had started to collect quite a princely sum together. Lusan had been worried about getting the exact design of the gold coins right, just in case someone became suspicious and started to investigate the source of the strange coins. For the past 2 days, he had asked Neela to buy their food in the richer northern quarter of town, using their gold coins. Then, after the second day, he had collected enough silver coins together from the change to exchange for a genuine gold coin at the bank. From that coin, he would copy the design for all his future coins. Therefore, there would be no way to tell they weren't actually genuine minted coins. Each time they spent a day by the side of the river, they usually managed to make between 3 and 4 coins, depending on how far up or down river they ventured. These gold coins, added to the silver coins they had earned from Mr. Daffer, meant they would have more than enough to last them for a long while after they had finished the job at the bookshop. From the start, Lusan and Neela had kept their gold and silver coins safe in one of the small wooden chests that were to be found in most of the sleeping cells. However, Lusan realized that when they finally finished the job for Mr. Daffer, and they left the underground chamber for good, they wouldn't be able to carry a wooden chest around with them on the streets of Helveel, for obvious reasons. With this in mind, they had visited the local leatherworker's shop and bought 2 coin pouches, which could be concealed under their tunics out of sight. The craftsman had also suggested that he should add a metal wire inside the string of the coin pouch, making it almost impossible for a cutpurse to steal it by the usual methods should it be spotted under their garments. Neela's coin pouch fastened easily to her thick knife belt, but Lusam's kept trying to pull down his trousers with the weight of the coins, and he was forced to return to the leather shop the following day to purchase a belt for himself, to avoid any future potentially embarrassing moments. Lusan lay on his bed, smiling contently to himself. He was absent-mindedly staring at the ceiling of his sleeping cell, daydreaming and thinking of his past and possible future. Life was good at the moment for Lusan. It had been a long time since he'd felt so relaxed and in control of his own life. He no longer had to look forward to only a hard life on the streets, without food, shelter, or warmth. He could easily provide enough coin for the rest of his life. He also no longer had to worry about being attacked on the streets of Helveel by anyone who wanted what he had. Lusan's mind wandered freely, and eventually he found himself thinking about Neela and what she might want to do after leaving Mr. Daffer's shop. He thought about where they might go together and what they might do there. Suddenly, he got a knot in his stomach. He realized that even after spending all that time together, not once had they ever discussed what they would do when they left the bookshop. For all Lusan knew, Neela might want to go her own separate way now that she had plenty of her own money and set up life in another part of the country. Alone. That thought hit him like a thunderbolt. He sat up from his bed, almost breathless with panic at the thought of losing Neela. He knew in that instant he loved her beyond doubt, but he had no idea if she felt the same way about him. He couldn't even imagine losing her, nor did he want to try. Lusan sat on the edge of his bed, trying to think of a way to ask Neela how she felt about him and what she planned to do in the very near future when they were finally finished at the bookshop. He couldn't believe how nervous he was just thinking about discussing the subject with Neela, just in case he didn't like what she said. but he knew he must talk with her, and soon, very soon. Standing up from his bed, he left his room and headed to where Neela slept. Lusam could see the gentle light of a lantern spilling from her room into the dark corridor up ahead, and was overtaken by a fresh wave of nervousness as he realized she was still awake. He knew there would be no possibility he could sleep anyway if he didn't speak to her now, so he continued down the dark corridor until he came to her door.
"Neela, are you still awake?"
he said in a soft voice from the corridor. Neela was reading one of the books Lusam had used to teach her how to read when she heard Lusam call softly from outside her door.
"Yes, come in,"
she replied through the open door. Lusam took a deep breath to steady his nerves before walking through the door and into the light of Neela's room.
"Is everything all right?"
Neela asked, looking concerned at his late visit and the worried look on Lusam's face.
"Yes. Yes, I hope so,"
he replied, sounding a little unsure of himself. Placing her book on the bed, Neela stood up and approached Lusam.
"So, are you going to tell me?"
she asked, smiling at him. Sometimes Lusam was sure that Neela knew exactly what he was going to say even before he said it, and only wanted to torture him by making him say it out loud. Swallowing any pretense of bravery, he decided to just say what was on his mind.
"Well, as you know, in the next couple of days we should be finished here."
"Yes,"
she prompted.
"Well, I was, wondering if you had given any thought to what you might do after we leave here,"
he said, gesturing around with his hands.
"I'm not sure what you mean,"
she replied, still wearing that smile of hers. Lusam was sure she knew exactly what he meant and was just taking great pleasure in making him squirm so much as he tiptoed around the real issue.
"I was in my room just now, thinking about what we would do when we leave here, and I realized we've never spoken about it before,"
he said, looking more worried by the second. Neela took a step closer to Lusam and looked up into his eyes.
"Not so long ago, a handsome young man told me that we were a team. I hope he hasn't changed his mind,"
she half whispered to him, looking deep into his eyes. Lusam almost rocked as his mind tried to take in the full meaning of her words.
"Neela, I love you,"
he whispered back, hoping beyond hope that he hadn't misread her words or her body language.
"I love you too,"
she replied, throwing her arms around his neck and embracing him tightly. Those few words were the best sounds Lusam had ever heard in his whole life. The sudden relief that washed over him almost made him feel dizzy. She actually loved him too.
Life just couldn't get any better than this, he thought.
Feeling wet on his neck, he realized Neela was crying. Pulling away slightly to get a better look at her face, he asked,
"What's the matter? Are you okay?"
Smiling at him through tears of joy, she just nodded her head, then kissed him like he'd never been kissed before. Chapter 7. As they came within sight of Helvile, the heavens opened, and another heavy spring downpour drenched the two men. Already wearied by their long trip from Stelgad and wanting nothing more than to find a warm inn that served good ale and a bed for the night, the weather did little to improve their mood. Travelling the long road between Stelgad and Helvile at this time of year was at best unpleasant, but could easily be deadly for any unwary travellers. The main road skirted the southern Elvine Mountains, and at this time of year that usually meant warm but very wet days, followed by freezing temperatures at night. With only two horses and no covered wagon to travel in, that meant their clothes were constantly wet to the skin, never having time to dry, before the cold air from the mountains tried to freeze them to death each night. Both men had agreed many times on their journey that whoever was responsible for them having to make this godforsaken trip would pay dearly before they handed them over to their boss, Shiva. Skelly would have liked nothing better than to simply kill whoever they had been sent to find, but his orders were clear. He had been instructed in no uncertain terms that he must return the culprit alive and unharmed for Shiva to deal with personally. Even Skelly dare not cross Shiva, but he was a skilled assassin and could inflict more than enough pain without leaving any evidence behind, and he planned to do just that. They entered Helvile via the south gate, then headed directly through the city to the northern quarter. One thing Skelly was well known for was his love of the finer things in life, and he wasn't concerned how much they cost as long as they met with his strict high standards. Skelly was accepted within his guild as being the unofficial second in command, with only Shiva above him in the chain of command. Being in such a position brought many advantages, including, among other things, a plentiful supply of coin. Entering the northern quarter, Skelly briefly stopped his horse and asked a well-dressed man for his recommendation of an inn. He was directed two streets further north, where he was told he would find an excellent establishment called the Golden Feather. Sure enough, when they arrived, they found a well-cared-for building with fresh flowers in hanging baskets outside and the irresistible smell of fine food coming from the kitchens around the back. Noticing them stop at the front of the building, a young stable boy came to greet them and offered to take their horses for feeding and grooming. Skelly nodded his approval and flipped a silver coin to the young lad. Then both men headed inside to procure rooms and refreshments. Skelly had chosen Carter to accompany him on this trip for mainly one reason. He was the only other member of his guild that he knew of who also appreciated the higher-class establishments and, more importantly, knew how to act within them. Bringing anyone else from his guild to a place like this would have inevitably resulted in a brawl, with both of them being ejected or possibly arrested by the town guards before the end of the night. The others were far more used to sawdust and blood on the floor than polished wooden carpets. And although Skelly was happy to rough it with the rest, given a choice, this would always be his first preference. Both men approached the bar, where a pretty serving girl with long dark hair and brown eyes stood drying a tankard with a clean cloth. She suspiciously watched their approach, but remained where she was.
"Can I help you gentlemen with something?" she asked, in a clear, well-spoken voice.
Skelly stepped forward and cleared his throat.
"Yes, I hope so, miss. My friend and I are in need of a room each, preferably with a bath if you have one, please. We were also looking to have a meal, if possible."
The young girl looked surprised at Skelly's well-spoken manner, obviously expecting something quite different from the look of him and his dirty traveling clothes. It was apparent to Skelly that she didn't really know how to answer his request, so he attempted to put her a little more at ease by saying,
"I'm sorry, how rude of me. My name is Skelly, and my associate here is Carter. You will have to excuse our appearance. We have just arrived in Hillveel from Stelgad. It's been a long and hard journey. May I ask if you have a laundry service too? As you can see, our clothes are in desperate need of cleaning after our long journey."
Skelly was an expert at infiltrating the higher classes of society and gaining their trust, which was essential to some of the guild's larger acquisitions. Gaining the respect of this young girl was child's play in comparison to them. Sure enough, the girl visibly relaxed as she readjusted her assessment of the two men standing before her.
"My name is Anna. Pleased to meet you both," she replied,
looking far more relaxed now.
"We do have two rooms available on the second floor, if that would be suitable for your needs."
"I'm sure they will be just fine, thank you," replied Skelly.
"Very good, sir. With regards to your other requests, we do have a bathhouse here on the ground floor that you may use. Just let myself or one of the others know when you wish to use it, and we will make sure you have plenty of hot water and towels available. I could have your clothes collected from your rooms for washing later this evening when you retire, and have them brought back to you by morning, if that is acceptable. With regards to the food, we serve soup, cold meats and bread throughout the day, and evening meal is available between 7 and 9 o'clock. Tonight we are serving a choice of either roast beef and vegetables or grilled river trout and vegetables."
"That sounds wonderful. We will take the two rooms for one night with a view to extending our stay, depending on how our business here in Hillveel goes tomorrow. Please could you also send up two platters of cold meat and bread with some of your finest ale at your earliest convenience?"
"Of course, sir. That will be 1 gold for the two rooms and 2 silver for the platter and ale. Would you also like me to reserve you a table for the evening meal?"
she asked, while taking 2 keys off their hooks and placing them on the counter.
"Yes, please, if you wouldn't mind. We will be downstairs around 7 o'clock, if that's acceptable,"
Skelly replied, placing 2 gold coins on the counter and taking the keys in exchange.
"Yes, sir. That's fine. I'll make sure your table is ready for you by 7. If you will excuse me, I shall fetch your change."
"No need. Please keep the change as a token of our gratitude for all of your help," Skelly said, smiling and performing a small mock bow towards her.
"Why, thank you, sir. That's most generous of you. I hope your stay with us here at the Golden Feather is a very pleasant one,"
she replied, returning his mock bow with a similar curtsy of her own, before turning and disappearing into the back room, obviously very happy with her generous tip. Carter glanced at Skelly with a puzzled look on his face, but knew better than to ask questions here where they could be overheard. So he took one of the keys, and they both went to find their rooms. The rooms were adjacent to one another, with a lockable connecting door between the two rooms. As expected, both rooms were impeccably clean, with crisp white bed linens, thick velvet curtains, and various pieces of opulent-looking furniture dotted around the room. Carter closed the door behind them, before asking, "What was all that about?" "Or what?" Skelly asked, still inspecting the contents of the room. "The fake accent, speaking like you're some lord, and the king-sized tip you left that barmaid," Carter replied, hoping he hadn't overstepped his mark. Skelly wasn't known for his kind nature or small talk. Skelly turned to look at Carter, who he could see was instantly regretting asking the question. But after the hard 2-week journey they had just endured, being here in a warm, dry and comfortable inn, with the prospect of some fine food and drink, not to mention a bath, had put Skelly in a good mood for a change. He didn't want to spoil it by killing his travelling companion and having to go and find another place to stay in a poorer part of the city.
"If you really need to know, someone once told me, if you let people think you have nothing, they will keep you with nothing. Or in other words, if they think you're worth something, they will treat you as such. As for the tip, that will buy us far more in the way of service and quality of food and ale over the coming night than the sum I gave her would ever do in reality. You'll see," Skelly replied, studying Carter to see if he truly understood. "Anything else you'd like to know?"
Carter just shook his head nervously before pointing with his chin towards the adjoining door.
"Well, I think I'll go check out my room and wait for the food. Leave you to settle in here," he said, quickly heading towards the door without waiting for a reply.
Skelly just nodded to himself. At least Carter was smart enough not to bug him too much. He liked him for that. Whether it would be enough if he got under Skelly's skin when he wasn't in such a good mood was another matter entirely. The next morning, Skelly and Carter headed straight for the horse trader that had been spotted with their guild horse. They found the horse trader on the outskirts of the city, in the southern part of Hellveal. It looked like whoever had stolen the horse had sold it to the first trader they had come across in Hellveal. As luck would have it, the guild horse was still there in the corral. Plainly visible on its hindquarters was the guild symbol that was branded on all their livestock in Stelgad. A large man noticed them looking at the horse, and came over to the fence to ask if they were interested in buying the animal.
"Morning, good sirs," he said, lifting off his hat a little and bobbing his head. "A fine animal, that one. I'm sure we can come to agree a fair price for it, if you're interested."
Neither man responded to the horse trader, but Skelly turned to stare at him with those cold, deadly blue eyes of his, before turning his attention back to the horse. Nodding towards the animal, he asked in a cold voice that would shake the confidence of most men,
"Where did you get that horse?"
Looking from one man to the other, the horse trader gave the impression he didn't intimidate easily.
"Too bad for him," Skelly thought. "If I have to ask you again, it's going to get painful for you," Skelly said,
taking a step closer to the fence that separated him and the horse trader. The man obviously wasn't used to being spoken to in this manner, and took a step towards the fence in a show of defiance. Skelly approved of his bravery, then balked at his stupidity. The horse trader lifted one arm to point down the road, whilst grabbing a fence post with his other hand.
"Get the hell off my property, you—"
he screamed, as his hand was pinned to the top of the fence post by Skelly's dagger. Skelly had moved so fast even Carter hadn't seen what was coming. Skelly's actions took Carter by complete surprise, so much so he took an involuntary step back as the knife pierced the man's hand. The man stood there, whimpering in pain, as his blood flowed down his fingers, dripping onto the grass below. Skelly kept a firm hold of the dagger and moved closer to the man. He removed a second dagger, then placed it across the horse trader's little finger, applying a small amount of pressure.
"Okay, I'll ask again. Where did you get that horse?"
"Go to hell! Ah!"
he screamed again, as his little finger fell from his hand to join the rest of his blood on the floor. Moving his dagger to the next finger, Skelly once again applied a little pressure.
"Wrong answer.
but I guess you have 19 more attempts to get it right. Where did you get the horse? Skelly asked again. This time his question was met only with a stony silence, until he let out another scream as a second finger hit the floor. Skelly was genuinely impressed by the horse trader's guts, but that wouldn't save him if he didn't talk. Again, Skelly moved on to the next finger and asked his question once more. Where did you get the horse? Whimpering through the pain, he heard the man say something. Louder, I can't hear you, or I'll cut off another one.
A girl!
The man screamed. That's better. Now we're getting somewhere. What was her name?
We don't know!
Screamed the man, panicking that he was about to lose another finger. Okay, I'm not unreasonable. I understand you probably didn't know her name. But give me a description, Skelly said, ever so slightly moving the dagger that still pinned the man's hand to the fence, causing him to cry out in pain again. Panting through the pain, he managed to say,
She was young, maybe 16, blonde hair, about my height. Please, that's all I know. I need two hands to work. Please,
he pleaded. That's good. But how am I to find someone in Hellveal with only that information to go on? You need to give me something else to work with. Or I could simply remove another of your fingers to jog your memory, Skelly said coldly.
No, please, we don't know anything else,
the man begged. Okay, have it your way.
No, wait, I remember something.
Funny how pain jogs the memory, isn't it? Skelly replied, grinning at Carter, who by this point was looking quite pale. Go ahead, I'm listening.
The girl, after she sold me the horse, she asked me which was the best thieves' guild here in Hellveal. I told her to try the Raven's Guild. Oh!
Skelly removed the knife from the man's hand, and faster than anyone should be able to move, grabbed the back of the man's head and placed it where his hand had been only a moment before. Holding a dagger to the man's eye, he said in a stone-cold voice, If you're lying to me, I'll come back and kill you, and it won't be fast. Do you understand?
Yes!
The man screamed in absolute terror. Skelly let go of him, and he collapsed into a heap on the floor, clutching his mutilated hand to his chest and crying like a child, and Skelly and Carter turned and calmly walked away. It wasn't hard to find the headquarters of the Raven's Guild. It seemed almost everyone knew where it was located, and they soon arrived at the unassuming-looking building. Two burly men stood guard outside the entrance, and as Skelly and Carter approached, they both removed weapons from their belts. Calm down, lads. We're not here to cause you any trouble. Skelly reassured them, holding up his open hands to show he wasn't carrying any weapons.
You got no business here. Move along before you get hurt,
one of the guards said menacingly. I need to speak with whoever's in charge of your recruiting here at the Raven's Guild, Skelly replied, not backing down.
Well, he doesn't want to speak with you,
the other man said, laughing as if what he had just said was the funniest thing he had ever come up with. Skelly wasn't amused, and the look in his eyes when he stared at the men left them in no doubt either. Both men stopped laughing almost immediately, as the tension in the air rose rapidly. One false move, and everyone knew blood would be spilt. Not looking half as confident as they had when Skelly and Carter had arrived, the first man said,
I can ask Tyrae if he wants to speak with you, but he's going to ask what you want and who you are.
What I want is none of your business. As for who I am, tell him I'm a fellow thief from Stelgard looking for a little professional courtesy, Skelly replied, with a forced smile that hid none of his contempt towards the two men. One of the two men whispered something in the ear of the other, before saying,
Wait here. I'll ask him if he wants to see you.
Then he opened the door and disappeared through it, closing it firmly behind him. Several minutes passed before the door reopened, and the man who had taken the message reappeared, followed by eight other men. None of the men looked friendly, but Skelly had no doubt he would end them all without breaking a sweat if he had to. One of the men stepped forward, eyeing them both up and down, before saying,
My name is Tyrae. I believe you wish to speak with me.
My name's Skelly. Thanks for taking the time to come and talk with me. I appreciate it.
How can I help you, Skelly?
Tyrae asked calmly, as his men spread out all around him in a semicircle, ready for any trouble that might arise.
"I'm looking for a girl," Skelly started to say.
"Aren't we all?"
laughed one of the guards at the door. Tyrae turned sharply to look at the man, who visibly withered under his gaze. Then he turned back to Skelly and said,
"Sorry, please continue. A girl?"
"Yes, a blonde girl, around 16 years of age and average height. I believe she approached you a few months ago to join your guild. She is wanted by our guild for theft of guild property. Any information you have would be well appreciated."
Skelly knew that every thieves' guild viewed the theft of its own property by one of its own members as the highest crime possible. Having an organization comprised solely of thieves had to have the strictest possible consequences for anyone caught stealing from its own members. Usually it meant a death sentence without trial, and if this girl had gained employment here at the Raven's Guild, she would be ejected without question to face the accusing guild's justice. To do otherwise would risk a possible guild war and the complete breakdown of thieves' justice within their organizations. Skelly saw the glint of recognition in Tyrae's eyes as he gave the description of the girl, but said nothing. He could see Tyrae carefully working out the possibilities and ramifications of the situation before responding.
"I have seen the girl you're describing. She came here, like you say, a few months ago, but she was refused entry to the Raven's Guild. I knew nothing of her and thought she might be a spy sent by a rival guild. I'm sure you understand."
"Of course. Can you tell me where she is now?"
"What makes you think I would know where she is now?"
"Because if you really thought she was a spy, like you say, you would have had her followed for a while to see if she reported back to another guild, and killed her if she had."
"And how do you know I would do that?"
"Because that's what I would have done," Skelly replied.
Tyrae laughed while nodding his head.
"I see you're no wet behind the ears recruit, Skelly. Yes, I did have her followed for over a week. Smart girl, that one. She never approached another guild during that time. She was seen sleeping rough on the streets each night, and often visited the main gates each morning, like all the street kids do, to look for work. Last time she was seen, she was wearing a brown tunic and green trousers, if that helps."
"Sir,"
one of the men addressed Tyrae. Tyrae looked at him and bobbed his head for him to speak.
"I have seen her a couple of times since we stopped following her. She was with a boy of about the same age last time I saw her."
The man continued to give Skelly a description of the boy and where he had seen them visiting.
"Thank you for your help. My guild appreciates your time and information. We would be happy to return the favor in the future if you ever find yourself in a similar situation. I also thank you for not requesting payment for the information, which of course you were fully entitled to do. If, however, any of your guild spots this girl, I would be more than willing to pay for the information regarding her whereabouts. We'll be staying at the Golden Feather if she turns up."
"No need to pay. If she's spotted, I'll send word to you of her whereabouts. There's nothing I hate more in this world than a thief who steals from their own. Just promise me one thing. Make sure she suffers before she dies,"
Tyrae replied with conviction.
"Oh, you can count on that," replied Skelly with an evil grin.
Chapter 8. Lusan woke up feeling happier than he could ever remember feeling in his whole life. The night before, still fresh in his memory, of Neela's soft lips and how wonderful they felt against his own. How they cuddled and caressed for hours, then talked into the small hours of the morning about things he thought he would never share with anyone. Today was both an end and a new beginning for Lusan. Finally, the books were almost all catalogued. Today would be their last day before the work was complete. He was glad the tedious work was finally coming to an end, but he also knew he would miss this place too. This old underground monastery had given him so much, not least of which was the love of Neela, and the new magical knowledge he had gained, which he could use to create a new life for them both in the future. Feeling doubly blessed, he offered a prayer of thanks to Aisha, and asked that his good fortune might continue in the future they had both planned together the night before. After getting dressed, he headed to the bookroom for the final time, where he started moving the small remaining pile of books magically to be sorted alphabetically. He had only been there a few minutes when Neela entered the room with a beaming smile on her face. She didn't offer him her usual morning greetings as she entered the room, but instead walked over to him, sat on his knee, and gave him a gentle kiss on his forehead, before saying,
"Good morning, my little mage."
Lusam smiled at the sound of her sultry voice, before kissing her lips and saying in his best attempt to replicate the voice,
"Good morning, my little assassin."
Neela playfully scowled and pouted at the description he used, but didn't comment on it any further. She then kissed his forehead once more and stood up.
"So, looks like our last day here then,"
she said, nodding towards the few books that were left in the small pile.
"Yeah, I was just thinking about that earlier. I think I'll miss this place, you know. It's been good to us here. It's kept us warm and dry over winter, provided us with money and food, my new magic, and best of all, it gave me you."
Neela beamed at his last comment.
"I'll miss it too, but at least I'll have you. I think we owe Mr. Daffa more than he could ever know,"
Neela said. Lusam laughed.
"You're not kidding. How strange fate is. If I hadn't decided to go to the main gate that day, I'd never have met you, and none of this would ever have happened. Maybe we both would still be living on the streets, even now. Who knows?"
"I'm glad you did go to the gate."
"Me too," he agreed.
"There aren't many books left to do, maybe 2 hours at most. How about I come with you to get our supplies today?"
"That would be really nice,"
Neela said, offering her hand to hold. Lusam took her hand, and they left the book room and headed for the stairs to the shop. When they entered the shop, they both noticed Mr. Daffa behind the counter slowly wrapping some books in brown paper.
"Good morning, Mr. Daffa,"
they both said, almost in unison.
"Good morning,"
he replied glumly. Lusam thought it would be an ideal opportunity to inform Mr. Daffa that this would be their last day and thank him and Lucy for the chance of working for them both.
"Mr. Daffa, I thought you would like to know all the books will be catalogued by the end of today. We would both like to thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to do the work for you,"
Lusam said, noticing Mr. Daffa looked more than a little preoccupied.
"Oh, yes. Thank you both. That's good to hear,"
Mr. Daffa replied, without any conviction in his voice at all.
"Would it be okay to thank Lucy too?"
Neela asked hopefully. Mr. Daffa visibly sagged at the question. Lowering his head, he replied in a muffled voice,
"I'm afraid not, Neela. Lucy is gravely ill and hasn't been awake since the day before yesterday. I will pass on your thanks if I am able."
He could not hide the tears now falling freely from his eyes as he looked away from Lusam and Neela. Neela gasped at the bad news before turning to Lusam and with desperation in her voice said,
"Lusam, you must help her. You can fix her with your magic."
Neela was cut short as Lusam squeezed her hand hard.
"Please, can I speak with you alone for a moment?"
Lusam asked, nodding his head towards the basement door. Without waiting for a reply, he pulled Neela by the hand to the top of the stairs. Lusam looked back over his shoulder at Mr. Daffa, but doubted he had even noticed their conversation, he looked so grief-stricken. Opening the door and almost pulling Neela through after him, he turned back towards her. He was about to speak when Neela angrily dragged her hand out of his grasp and interrupted him.
"What's wrong with you, Lusam? Lucy needs your help, now. Have you forgotten what you said not 5 minutes ago? We owe these people a huge amount. We certainly owe them enough to try and save one of their lives,"
she almost screamed at him.
"I haven't forgotten anything. Neela, believe me when I tell you, it's dangerous if we let people know about my magic." "Why? Why is it dangerous? Tell me."
Lusam thought for a moment. Then he realized he couldn't answer her question. He had been told over and over again by his grandmother when he was a child that it was dangerous to let people know that he could wield magic, but she never told him why.
I don't know," he replied, deflated.
"You don't know? You're refusing to help and you can't even tell me why? What happened to that person I met? The one who lived by his high and mighty moral code?"
Neela was angrier than he ever thought possible, and he knew he didn't have a good enough reason to refuse to help Lucy. He also had no idea at all if he could actually help her anyway. But there were two things he did know. The first was that these people deserved for him to at least try, and the second was that he certainly didn't want to lose Neela over something like this.
"Okay. I'll try. I'm not sure if I can do anything, though, but I'll try my best. Whether it works or not,
We must at least ask Mr. Daffer to keep my secret safe, Lusam said quietly. Neela looked at Lusam and nodded her head in agreement. She knew deep down that if he hadn't been genuinely concerned about keeping his secret safe, he would have agreed to help Lucy straight away. And if anything happened to Lusam because of this, she would never forgive herself.
Okay, we'll make him promise never to reveal your secret, no matter what happens, Neela agreed.
Lusam instantly felt the tension leave the air between them.
Thanks, Neela. I'm sorry I don't know why it's so important to keep my magic a secret, but I'm sure my grandmother had her reasons for making me promise never to reveal it. I'm sure if she had lived, she would have explained everything to me, and it would all make perfect sense. But unfortunately, I don't have all the answers, he said, in a soft, calm voice.
I understand your concerns. I really do. But we must help Lucy if we can. Come, let me talk with Mr. Daffer. I'm sure he'll agree to keep your secret safe.
Neela took hold of Lusam's hand and led him back into the shop, towards the counter where Mr. Daffer was still standing. Neela noticed how lost in thought Mr. Daffer was, as he absent-mindedly fiddled with the brown paper and string he was using to bind the books.
"Excuse me, Mr. Daffer," she said,
when he didn't seem to notice them both standing there. Mr. Daffer turned his head towards them, but remained silent. Neela cleared her throat and tried to think of the best way to approach the subject with Mr. Daffer, before deciding she should just say it.
"Mr. Daffer, we have something important to tell you, but you must promise us you will never tell anyone else. Can you promise us this?"
Mr. Daffer continued to stare blankly at her, as if he had not understood her words.
"Please, Mr. Daffer, Lusam can help Lucy, but you must promise first."
At the sound of Lucy's name, Mr. Daffer seemed to become aware of his surroundings once more, and focused on the two of them standing there.
"The healers said nobody can help her now, child," Mr. Daffer said in a defeated voice.
"Lusam may be able to help her, but I need you to promise you will keep his secret. Please, Mr. Daffer, promise me," she said, pleading with him.
Mr. Daffer looked at her and nodded his head. It wasn't quite what Neela wanted, but she guessed it was all she would get out of Mr. Daffer, so she continued.
"Mr. Daffer, Lusam can try to heal Lucy with his magic. He's really very good at it. Can you take us to her so he can try?"
Mr. Daffer's face and mood changed so quickly it took Neela by surprise.
"Are you mad, girl? Magic is not real. Please, leave me alone. I have enough to worry about without your wild promises."
"But it's true. Just give him a chance and you'll see."
"Get out!"
Mr. Daffer shouted at them both, pointing towards the door. Still holding Lusam's hand, she turned to him and said,
"I'm sorry, Lusam. Sorry for
Ah!"
Neela lifted Lusam's hand and in the blink of an eye, cut the back of his hand with her dagger.
"What did you do that for?"
he asked, holding his now bleeding hand in his other hand.
"Oh, stop being a baby. It's only a scratch. Now you can show Mr. Daffer you can use magic."
"I could have convinced him I had magic abilities by lifting one of his bookcases or something. He didn't have to cut me,"
he replied incredulously.
"Oh, yeah. I never thought of that. Sorry,"
Neela said apologetically. Mr. Daffer stood there looking furiously at the two standing before him, one of whom was now bleeding all over his clean floor. He was about to repeat his demand that they left his property immediately when Lusam put his bleeding hand on top of the counter in front of Mr. Daffer. Blood pooled on the counter around Lusam's hand as he began to focus on closing the wound. Mr. Daffer stood there with a look of complete shock and amazement as the wound on Lusam's hand closed and vanished before his eyes. Once the wound was completely healed, Lusam wiped away the remaining blood to reveal a perfectly healed hand.
"How? How's that possible?"
Mr. Daffer whispered breathlessly, staring open-mouthed between Lusam's healed hand and the two people standing before him.
"I told you, he can help Lucy with his magic, but you must promise never to reveal his secret to anyone, ever,"
Neela repeated.
"Yes. Yes, I promise. I'll do anything if you help my Lucy. Please, help her. Please."
"I'll do my best to help her, Mr. Daffer. I promise. But until I see her, I can't be certain I can cure her. You should know this before we start."
Lusam didn't want to give Mr. Daffer any false hope, just in case he couldn't help Lucy after all.
"Please, anything you can do, I would be forever in your debt. Please, follow me. I will take you to her right away."
Mr. Daffer almost ran out of the room, towards the dining room, where they had all shared a meal when they'd first arrived. Mr. Daffer started to climb the wide, curved staircase to the first floor, with Lusam and Neela following close behind. Lusam nudged